So what I'm doing the next 2 weeks, two-week series, and I want to just to kind of share this with you. With everything that's happening, I want to be as relevant as possible, but I just really felt purpose God put upon my heart, the need to just kind of encourage some people. Last week we talked about, well, the week before, when God seems silent, but this week I want to talk about what it means to be balanced, what it means to be balanced. So my question this morning is simply this. Have you ever fallen because you've lost your balance? How many of you have ever fallen to the ground? Raise your hand. How many of you have never fallen because you've lost your balance? I want to see the people raise their hand. You've never fallen. Come on, let me see. Just put it up. If you're going to lie, we want to see your hand up in front of everybody. Anybody else like that? I think at some point we all lose our balance. And regardless of how it is, I remember, let me give you a few reasons we lose our balance. First of all, sometimes we lose our balance from a reaction to an event or situation that happens to us. When something happens to us, it knocks us off unbalanced. I played basketball and soccer in high school and played soccer into college, and then I dropped that off because it was just too rough. But I was playing in high school my junior year. Any soccer players out here? I was playing back line defenseman, and the ball went out the end, so we really quick got it to the goalie, and the goalie gets to kick it as hard as they want back down the field. So it was one of my teammates' response. The goalie would throw the ball to him. He'd put him in place. The referee would basically give us an all free. So at that time, my coach says, "Gray, left side." Okay, so I take off, run off to the left side. Well, what I'm not paying attention to, the goalie's getting ready to kick that goalie kick. And his job is to kick that ball as hard as he can. So I'm running in front of the goalie, and he boots that ball. I'm about from here to Brad, and the ball hits me in the ear, in the head. Now, I don't know if you've ever had an equilibrium adjustment, but I look like I was shot by a sniper. It was more of a, and I went down hard. And of course, because my team loves me so much, they were not, "Oh, you okay?" There was laughter from the field. But I had lost my balance. And if you've ever been in that place where all of a sudden you know that you should be walking, running, going straight, maybe you catch your foot, maybe something that happens to you, and you lose that balance and you go down, you might be familiar with that kind of response. The other time, sometimes we lose a loss of balance. Sometimes it results from our excessive actions in one area and a neglect of responsibilities in another area. When you do something and it's overcompensation and it throws it off. If you've ever loaded, I did this just recently, moving some firewood in a wheelbarrow, and I got too much to the left side, and so I went to make that first corner, and because I had too much on the left side of the wheelbarrow, it was a little bit heavier. So what did I do? I tried to manhandle it and bring it right back into balance, but I lost balance, dumped the wood, yelled at the wood, and I said, "Renee, go stack that back up." That's exactly what I did. But if you compensate for something. And I think we could kind of all, we understand that. We see this happen in many areas of our life. Sometimes we neglect exercise and a good diet. You ever been guilty of that? Cheese fryers out there, you know what I'm talking about. And because of that, all of a sudden the doctor says, "You know, you're having a problem with your health." So what you've done in excess is now causing it to be out of balance. How about you neglect home maintenance? You don't fix that stuff you're supposed to. You let those projects go by, and then finally you figure out, I got to get it fixed. And it's more than what you can do, so you hire a professional, and it's a big bill because it's been neglected for such a long time. Now it's out of balance. How about relationships? How about relationships we neglect? Maybe our family for our career or for our work and our job, and then all of a sudden our teenage daughter, teenage son, seems to be non-cooperative. It's because we're paying for it now because we've been out of balance. We neglected an area, and now it's coming back to bite us. Today, I'd like to talk a little bit about the neglect of our finances. The theme we're talking about this week and next week is balance. So if you've ever tried to balance things, this is something we used to do when I was a kid when we played Little League ball. Now, this is literally one of my, when my boys were little, their baseball bats, so it's tiny. But we used to see who could do it the longest. And what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to put this on your fingers, and you're supposed to just hold it like that, and then just keep, whoa, not like that, you don't. You just basically hold it still. And the job was to see who could keep it up the longest. So one thing I noticed about it, and we're going to talk about a proper reference today, is that it's very simple. If you're balancing something, and it's those little, whoa, see, now I'm cheating. See that? You see my thumb on the back? I was cheating. I'm sorry. That's not the way it's supposed to be. But you hold it, and once you get balanced, but it's these little corrections and the little movements. This is what I've come to find out about most of us. When we become out of balance in life, it's normally not something huge that causes us to lose balance. It's a tiny little movement. Here, let's see if I can do it now. It's this tiny little movement. We move just a little bit, and all of a sudden we lose big time. It goes one direction. I have found that most people suffer from this life out of balancing feeling, not because of huge things you've done, but sometimes it's because of neglect, or it's done because of excessiveness, or it's been something happened a little bit, your job, your boss told you that you can't get off for vacation, all of a sudden you find out that you got this health hiccup, that you need to go back in for more tests, and it's these little things that seem to throw our life out of balance. Well, I believe that that is very strong in our lives, that those things happen, but I want to talk about a specific one that most of us pretty much don't even see it on the radar. We're going to talk about what it means to be balancing financially, being out of balance financially. So why are we talking about money at church? Because, you know, the church should be talking about what God is. It's amazing to me how much finances and how much stewardship and how much money is mentioned in the Bible and discussed in the Bible. We find as we read and study that, I believe very strongly that it's impossible to be out of balance financially and stay in balance with God, because it's going to show us there's some adjustments that need to be made. Now, you say this morning, you say, well, Pastor Brian, I believe that God, church, and money should be in two separate boxes. They should have nothing to do with each other. Well, okay. But chances are, if that's your response to me this morning, you've already mixed those two boxes. You've done it. Have you ever prayed the prayer that God would help you sell the house? You're asking God to connect with the finances to help you? That's connecting the two. Maybe, have you ever prayed about purchasing a car? Which car should I get? Okay, God, just give me the guidance and the strength. Give me the clear path. You're asking God to connect those two. Or maybe you're trying to find a better job or get a job. Again, you're praying for God to put those two things together. So I want to look about this morning, because the object I'm trying to get to, and I want you to hear this very strongly, I'm not trying to raise more money for the church. That's not my intention. My intention here is that I believe there's not one person in here that would say, I do not want someday to be a generous person. How many of you know a person that you would say they're a very generous person? Raise your hand. If I asked you how many of you would like to be generous, most of us would be, yeah, I'd like to be generous. But most of the time, we equate generosity with, well, when I have an abundance, then I could do more for other people. But that's not really the definition of generosity. Generosity is showing a readiness to give more of something than is strictly necessary or expected. It could be money. It can be time. There have been many times that my family has been the recipient of someone's generosity. Huge generosity. I can think back to when we were on a mission trip, the Manila in the Philippines. We were in a home of a very, very poor family, had very little. I was the preacher, pastor from the United States, and we were their honored guest in their home, and they wanted me to have a Coca-Cola. So they gave the Coca-Cola, and I'm like, no, no, no. And the missionary said, you need to take that, you need to take that, take that, drink that. Okay. So afterwards, we were very, thank you very much, and we drank the Coca-Cola, and it was hot and fizzy, but they were very honored that we were there. And what we came to find out is that just that family, in order to purchase that, was probably at least a day's wage per Coca-Cola. And I was just humbled that the generosity of someone saying that they wanted to love on us. Number of years ago at this church, my wife and myself had a financial, it was a season of just tight finances. And most of you know, if you have kids, kids cost a fortune sometimes, especially when they have car accidents in the school parking lot. I won't mention names, but it was three of my boys. But things were just tight. And we all know that when things get tight financially, it causes stress. And there was a family in our church that said, "Pastor, we've been praying about what God would have us do. We want to be generous with you and your wife, Renee." And they gave us a card and they said, here's a card. We want you to know that you're loved and we're praying for you. I said, "Can I open this now?" And they said, "If you want to." And I opened it and we were at a restaurant, Mansfield. It's a check for $1,000. Have you ever been the recipient of $1,000? And I remember opening that thing, and I was just overwhelmed emotionally with the generosity of this family. This family was not rich by any means. But if you've ever been the recipient of somebody's generosity, you do know that it's something that God gives them the ability to do, but it's an incredible feeling for them. It's an incredible feeling for me when I'm generous. When our kids were little, I'll prove it to you. When our kids were little and it was time for their Christmas gifts, we would try to go above and beyond to give our kids, you know what I'm talking about, the gift, the one that they wanted, the one they never thought they'd do. The year that we bought our kids a pool table and me and my wife pushed it upstairs and assembled that thing upstairs on the second floor in a game room. And I remember when they opened that, and when you see the kids and they're jumping with elation and they're pumped, their excitement, it's that generosity feeling. I did this for you. I want you to enjoy it. I want it to be a blessing. There's an incredible source of encouragement, of joy that comes from that. I do believe that most of us would love to be more generous. We'd like to be more generous. But I don't believe generosity is just a heart. I believe it is a heart response, not just a cash response. Not if I have some extra, then we'll see where this comes from. Paul talks specifically about generosity in 2 Corinthians chapter number 8. It says, "And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonia churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty, they were having a rough time, they welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. And they urgently pleaded with us the privilege of sharing the service of the Lord's people. They exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God also to us." Paul is describing this church is going through severe trials and afflictions, and they're overwhelmed by their poverty. He says, but by their grace through their giving, they overflowed with joy and rich generosity. They were incredibly generous even when they had nothing. See, we normally show generosity when we have extra, when we have a surplus. Well, I've taken care of my meal, Chick-fil-A. I was able to get my nails done. I was able to get my car washed. I got gas. I got like $5 left in my billfold. Here you go, sir. God bless you. And that's how many of us overflow generosity to other people. But that's not what Paul says is happening here. He says they went above and beyond. They gave not only what they were able, they even went beyond their ability. So he gives this church, the Corinthian church, this challenge. In verse number 7 of 2 Corinthians, "But since you excel in everything," he's talking to this church, "you excel in faith, you excel in speech, you excel in knowledge and complete earnestness and the love that we have kindled in you, see also that you excel in this grace of giving." See, I strongly believe that the reason many Christians struggle with being generous or being generous with God or others isn't because they don't want to. I just believe that they might be out of balance. They're out of balance and they're not able to. You see, God accomplishes today the way that the plan was for the New Testament. God supplies the needs and the resources of our community through the offerings and talents and gifts of our church. He accomplishes through our obedience to God, through giving. The problem that most of us have that don't understand what that's about is that just don't have it. We still live in a country that's incredibly wealthy as far as world standards go, but it's amazing the number of people that still live week to week to week to week. National statistics show us that 20% of most church congregations actually pay 80% of the church budget. And that's true here at our own church. It's amazing what we can do with that 20% of the people giving that 80%. Just think if we could tap into the other 15, 20% above the 20%. So my objective is not to get more money. I don't want that this morning. I want to help you plan your finances so that you can learn to be generous, not only with God, but with others as well. We're going to be discussing this week and next week the physical laws of balance. I came across this about 10 years ago, and it is so applicable to where we are right now. The contest that we had, holding the bat, it was amazing to me how that was, in my mind, as I'm preaching, an easy way to understand how important balance is. But there's three laws of balance. We're going to talk about the first law very quickly this morning, and then we'll catch the next two next week. We're going to talk about, first, you have to have a proper reference point. What do I need to focus on? What's the most important thing? What's my priority? When cheerleaders figure out a formation and they begin stacking, it's important for that top cheerleader to keep her balance, and she focuses on a focal point so that way everything seems to keep in reference to the rest of the field, so she keeps her balance. Next week, we're going to talk about you need to make constant corrections. We understand that holding a bat, if you've ever walked across as a kid, across maybe a piece of a log that's over a creek, you realize that as you're walking across that and you start to go, you have to make corrections. That's an important aspect of the law of balance. And then thirdly, we need to have a clear objective. We've got to know what we're doing. We have to keep the bat vertical. We have to know that stay on the log and go forward and straight. I believe as we learn to weave these principles, we can achieve financial balance. But here's what's kind of interesting. If you violate any of these physical laws, if you don't have a proper reference point, if you don't make corrections, if you don't have a clear objective, and you begin to lose balance, what happens? What happens? The bat falls to the ground, you fall in the creek, whatever it is. But there's something interesting. When you violate these laws in your finances, nothing happens immediately. Nothing happens immediately. That's why many of us here today have spent periods of our lives financially out of balance and nothing's happened. We're just kind of coasting. See, I came across this, I thought this was kind of a good illustration. The laws of personal finance, they do not follow these two laws. The law of Pinocchio. Are you familiar with the law of Pinocchio? The law of Pinocchio means there is an immediate consequence. When Pinocchio would tell a lie, what would happen? Come on. Immediately. It's just yank, yank, yank. Wouldn't it be cool if God would give us just like about a week in life for us to see that around us? Son, did you clean your room? Yes. Or anything you would ask people. But this does not apply normally to finances. Can you imagine if it did, if we saw something we shouldn't see and all of a sudden the law of Pinocchio kicked in and our eyes grew bigger? How awkward would that be? You walk around some guy and all of a sudden he's got these eyeballs that are this big. It's because the law of Pinocchio didn't take effect. If we saw something, if we said something we shouldn't have said and our mouth were to get bigger, but the law of Pinocchio is not in effect here. Also, the law of fairness. Personal finance doesn't follow the law of fairness. From kids, my mom, dad, that's not fair, that's not fair. And my response is, life's not fair, it's never going to be fair. You see, fair is how others outside my arena, how they influence my surroundings. But balance is how I personally affect those areas. But we will find out that the law of personal finances operates on the law of harvest, that we sow now and we reap later and greater. So really quickly, I want to get into the very, very first one. Turn your Bibles to the book of Matthew chapter number 6. The first law of balance is you must have a proper reference point. Proper reference point. Matthew chapter number 6, verse 21. You might be familiar with this verse. It says, "For your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. In other words, your heart follows your stuff. Are you picking up on that? You see, don't look at the Bible if you want to see where my heart is. If you want to see where my heart truly is, look at my checkbook. Look what's parked in my garage. Look what I have in storage. That's how you can tell where your heart is. And I want you to understand this, that this is, again, not a speech talk that says, "I want your money." This is very important for us to understand that this is a battle that's been going on forever. Jesus is saying, "I know that your heart follows your stuff. I know that your heart follows your stuff. I don't want to compete with your stuff because God wants our heart. He doesn't want something between us and him." Have you ever been in a relationship maybe where you felt like you were competing with somebody else's stuff? Maybe a car, maybe it's a collection, maybe it's guns, maybe it's time and schedule. I talked with a young lady not too long ago that said that she's dating this guy, but he would blow her off because he played softball 2-3 nights a week, and she felt like she was second place in his life. And she's getting ready to leave him. She says, I don't see our relationship getting any better." I said, "There's probably some wisdom in that." But in Luke chapter number 16, verse 13, this verse this morning, it's in your bulletin, and I want you to pick up on it because I believe that this is probably something that we don't talk a lot about in church. Luke 16, 13 says, "No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." You cannot serve both God and money. Look up here, everybody. I believe very strongly that many of us in this room, your conflict isn't between you and Satan. It's between you and your stuff. You and your stuff. See, I believe that tension will never, ever, ever, ever go away. And one of the reasons is because you look at the world, and our world has taken this bait. That it's about my stuff. It's about the how big are my rims. It's about how big is my house, my screen TV set. We are attached to that by the hip. And I believe that there's many Christians that fall into this same trap. You see, as I was studying this last week, I can't find one story in the New Testament where Jesus asked for money. He didn't ask for money. There was a story where he asked for a coin, and then he talked about the coin. He said, "Who's on this coin? Whose image is that? Caesar." He says, "What belongs to Caesar, or what has Caesar, needs to give back to Caesar." He was telling us, not necessarily, "I want you to give it to me. I want you to give it to him because that's who the tax money goes to." And the best I could figure out, I don't think he said, "Whose picture's on this coin?" They said, "Caesar." "That's right. Give your money to Caesar." I don't think he pocketed it. I think he probably gave it back to the individual. But listen to me very carefully. Jesus does not want to get your money. Did you just hear the Baptist preacher just say that? Did you catch that? Jesus does not want to get your money. This verse tells us he does not want your money to get you. Get the difference? So one of the things I believe as Christians we need to do, I'd take a number of young couples through kind of a basic 101 for finances, because most of us in here were probably not taught on how to handle our finances. So I began talking with young couples, and I said, first thing you got to do is you got to be knowing where your money is going. You got to spy and find out where you're spending your money, where it's going. If you had a financial manager, and you asked them, "Hey, how's my funds doing?" And their response was, "Well, I'm not really an organized person, so I'm not really sure." What would you do? What would you do to that financial manager? You'd boot him. That's right. You need, because you want somebody that's going to take accountability, somebody who's going to be organized. You'd find a new manager. You're right. Here's the big spiritual truth this morning. You ready? Your money will never be your money. Did you hear that? Your money will never be your money. Let's personalize it, okay? My money will never be my money. Say it with me. I want to make sure you're awake. Look up here. Here we go. Ready? My money will never be my money. Now say it with conviction. Here we go. My money will never be my money. This is one thing that I have become very much aware of, even just recently in our life. We're getting ready to transition Renee's folks to move to down here to Texas, and we're looking through their house. Renee's folks are 82 and 80 and 80. 82 and 80. So they're talking about selling the stuff that's in their house that they've accumulated all these years. And it's very near and dear to them. There's this Brazilian bird on the wall that's been there that Granny Barton, who was a missionary to Brazil, it's one of the gaudiest looking knickknacks you've ever seen. And we're talking about who's going to want some of these things. And I have to basically be very kind and say, Mom and Dad, there ain't nobody wants that bird. That's for sure. It's, you know what I'm talking about? It's the thing, if you've ever had garage sales, it's the thing that stays on the table the entire time. You got a nickel on it and it ain't moving. That bird is staying still. Well, if you ever stop and think about it, everything that you have right now that you think is valuable and is yours will someday be somebody else's. It won't be yours. Well, I'll give it to my kids. I'll be honest with you. Renee, I love your mom and dad, but I don't want that stupid bird. It's just not something I really have any desire for. But see, here's what happens. We believe that it's ours and it belongs to us. It never has been that way. The lesson that we find over and over and over again in God's word is it's called stewardship. We are managers of what God has given us. It's ours, but for a brief moment. You see, as we look at the first law of balance, where's my money going? You have to understand that. And we've done this since I've been pastor, and we understand it. It's the old, everything belongs to God, everything comes from God, everything's dispersed by God. We understand that. But when you begin to understand in a bigger picture, it changes the way that you do the cash thing, the cha-ching thing. It breaks my heart when I have people talk to me, Pastor, I'm upside down in my vehicle. I'm upside down in my house. I've got $60,000 in school debt. I can't afford to, because we're out of balance. And we've got to understand, first of all, that when you look and see where you're spending money, that is the look in the mirror. When I got up this morning, I felt pretty good. Went to a concert last night, had a great time with friends. We ate at Don Juan's Romantic Mexican Food Restaurant. And if you've never eaten there, let me save you a trip, because Don Juan visited me about 1:15 in the morning. But we had a great time. I didn't sleep real well, but then I woke up in the morning, went to the restroom as soon as I woke up because I'm over 50. That's just how things work. And so I walk over by the mirror, and I look in the mirror, and I'm like, oh. I mean, I know I don't have much hair, but all the hair on this side decided to say, hey, we want to go that direction. And the hair on this side says, we're just going to go up. So it was this. And I looked at that and I thought, oh my. Now, I could have done one of two things. I could have said, hey, that's pretty sly. I like that look. I'm gonna wear that to church this morning. And I'm going to walk away and just say, hey, babe, you ready to go to church? And my wife, very lovingly, would say, go do your hair. I don't care what you're going to do, but make something different, all right? But I believe that most of us are living in a state that we don't want to even look in the mirror. I talked with one young couple about budgeting, and he said, I don't really want, we're not really interested in budgeting right now because that would be too prohibitive. You catch that? I won't be able to get my cheese fries from Whataburger. That's what he's trying to tell me. So one of the things I do with them, I said, let's just look this one week and let's find out where you're spending your money. Where you're spending your money. So this is the first test. So if you're here this morning and you feel like things are tight, I'm going to give you the first test 101, spiritual stewardship. You got to be knowing where your money's going. You got that? So just this week, and if you don't have the courage to do it for a whole week, do it for 3 days. Find out what you're spending on food. Coffee. Just for a couple days. Tabulate it. Well, you know, Brian, I double dog dare you. You know what? Most people are clueless in that area. The second test is look what you're spending on entertainment every week. Cable, Spotify, I don't care what subscription you have. Look what money is going out. Because most of us don't exactly know what we're spending on. So when we talk about being generous, all you're doing is looking at the ledger column and it says there ain't nothing left. Try again next year. But ladies and gentlemen, I believe that when we are out of balance financially, we are out of balance with God because we do not have a generous spirit. We do not have a spirit that says, I want to be able to be in a situation where I can help you. Now, realistically, I remember when Renee and I were young and had four bouncing baby boys, screaming baby boys, whatever they were at that particular time, and our hands were full, and we had formula and diapers, and I think the first probably 10 years our kids were little, we never went to a restaurant unless it had a play area because that meant they weren't going to eat very much. They were going to play for an hour and a half. We got that down pretty quick. But we didn't have a lot of extra. But now as we get older, two of our children have married and left home. Two of our children, we're trying to get them to leave home. We're getting closer. Now we're able to be more generous than we ever have before. But I will tell you this, even as a young family, Renee and I would try to be generous with people frequently. My dad taught me that. My dad taught me that. You see, my dad, as part of his salary for the church he worked at, was given $200 cash every single week. And what he did with that $200 cash is he gave it to people. He wanted to bless people. He wanted to make sure that somebody else... There were many times, because I worked with my dad for a number of years, he would say, hey, doesn't Todd work like the second shift over at Walmart stocking shelves? Yeah. He says, isn't that by your house? Yeah. Here, I want you to do me a favor. Here's a $100 bill. I want you to go find him because they're short on groceries and stuff. Go by Walmart and see if he's working and drop it by and tell him that pastor said that we're praying for him. Well, Dad, if you're praying for him, why don't you go over to Walmart at 11:30 at night and you tell him. No, that's why I have an associate pastor. You take care of that for me, okay? So what did I do? 11:30 at night, went over to where Todd was working at Walmart, and what do you think I did? Me and Renee are praying for you. Here's some money. There's this incredible generous thing that I began to understand. Now, it wasn't my money, so it was really easy to give away. But once God started blessing us till we could be generous, there's nothing like that. There's nothing like that. You know what many of us have resorted to? We'll be praying for you. We'll be praying for you. You know that family that gave us a $1,000 check? If they'd have said, Pastor Brian, we'll be praying for you. Well, their generosity was a reflection of who God was to us. And it was a challenge. And that's something that we've stepped up to. And I'm telling you, it's been my favorite part about this stage of life right now, is being able to be generous. But not to pat myself on the back, we learned a long time ago the importance of having a proper reference point, the importance of making corrections. This morning, financially, where are you at? Are you out of balance? Are you out of balance? See, I found out that most Christians, if they were truthful, will say to that, kind of, sort of. But I do know this. If I had a microphone and went to a number of you here this morning, you would sing the praises of, look what God has done with his blessings. He has blessed our family because we've always put him first. We've always put other first. You see, it's a you and money thing, not you against Satan thing. So why do pastors talk about money? Okay, ready for me to be transparent? I hate talking about money. Because I always felt like the preacher had a vested interest. Because when the church gave more that paid the pastor's salary, it seems almost a little conflict of interest. But here's my desire, is I don't want you to be strangled to death because your stuff is more important than God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. That means family. That means finances. That means possessions. God wants to be first and foremost. So as we look at balance, this morning you're either this, or this morning you're this, or unfortunately, some of you this morning are there. And you don't know how to get back up. You don't know how to recuperate. It's because you've got to have the proper reference point. God, everything that I have is because of you. Everything that you've blessed me with. I want to have the balance. I want to have balance in my relationships. I want to have balance in my work situations, between my family and my job. It requires balance. Let's bow our heads for a word of prayer this morning.